y'all, thank you for joining us again for another Message Recap podcast. My name is David, and sitting across from me is our teacher from last Sunday, Pierce Vanderslice.
Hello, hello.
Man, I thought you did a fantastic job preaching last Sunday, talking to us personally and objectively about doubt and walking us through your own personal experiences. Get us into your mindset of what it was like preparing for that sermon, because it was a very personal sermon. You had some personal stories in there.
So, you know, it's funny about you asking that question. I haven't told you this. I wasn't going to tell you this, except for this question suggests I should. What really kept ringing around in my head was the phrase that you said 2 weeks ago with Payne, I'm going to take the priest collar off. Mm-hmm. And I think I enjoy, as you do also, preaching from a little bit of a place of vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And so that, in many ways, was my mindset, was taking the priest collar off and sharing that, hey, I have doubted of any path of totality, of any of these series or these sermons of, hey, God, where are you? I've probably spent the most time in doubt. And like I said, there are questions, there are books that frankly, I say I wish I would have never asked, I wish I would have never read. I think I'm glad that I did, because I do think sometimes doubt can lead to a place of building up what it is that we already have. But yeah, I have spent a lot of time there in the path of totality, in the darkness of asking some big questions. So the mindset was take off the priest collar and then preach what you know, preach your experience. Preach the text and how the text has impacted your experience.
Is it a fair statement to say that all Christians will go through a season of doubt in their life?
I think so. I do. And I think, you know, it's so interesting that John included that little story. And it's not little, it's significant. But at the same time, Matthew, Mark, and Luke didn't. And there's a lot in John that's not in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. But Thomas, I mean, he was one of the 12, but we don't hear a lot about him. But then in this marvelous chapter of John 20, we get this story. And I think that Jesus is sharing this story of Thomas. John is sharing this story of Jesus appearing to Thomas in the midst of his doubt as sort of permission for us to know that Jesus is not angry with you about your doubts. And in fact, your doubts are natural. And so, yeah, I think that doubts are natural, and I think they should be. I think when doubts don't come at some point, I fear that there might not be a lot of investigation of your faith and a really of making your faith your own. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
It does. Almost like doubts. Keller has that illustration in Reason for God that doubts are like antibodies,
or a
vaccine, to where if you are not consistently thinking through, working through the thoughts that you have about your life, your faith, then when something truly bad happens, a true disease in life comes in the form of death, debt, divorce, disease, whatever it may be, then that's going to wreck you if you haven't had the antibodies already built up in your body because of it.
If you haven't taken the leap.
That's right.
I mean, that's been my experience with doubt, is that before taking the leap and before any significant pain, disappointment, then you can build this sort of beautiful house of cards of faith. But as soon as pain, doubt, disappointment enter the scenario, that house of card crumbles, and that's when you have a decision. Do I take the leap? Hopefully. But if you don't, then I don't know if you can ever really rebuild sort of what was this house of cards-like faith. Mm-hmm. Keep going. I'm not going to share what I was just thinking. I don't know if it'd be podcast popular.
Well, put a pin in it and see if it resurfaces.
It won't. In a minute.
It won't?
I don't think so.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was. God knows. So, you gave a beautiful story, but also a very vulnerable and personal story of when you were sitting in college and they brought somebody up on stage who had been healed of cancer. And you had a friend sitting next to you whose mom had passed away of cancer. And you said the emotion that welled up in you was anger, was disappointment, was frustration. How do we get to a place where we can honestly talk about those things? Now, I get it. It's hard to talk about that from the stage and to kind of be vulnerable. I understand that. But how do we do that in our life groups? How do we do that in our interactions? How do we get to the point where we can honestly say, I'm glad that someone was healed, but what about me? Because mm-hmm. that's a real feeling.
Well, one, I'd love to hear your answer to this because you, as you said in your sermon, your aunt just passed away of cancer. Mm-hmm. Katie's mom, your mother-in-law. And so I think you'll have maybe more immediate sort of from the trenches perspective. For one, I would say that happened 10, 11, 12 years ago. Mm-hmm. So yes, well, I don't know if I would have shared that 5 years ago. Let me just be really straightforward to you. It also wasn't my mom. Mm-hmm. It was a friend who I never had the opportunity to meet his mom. And so that story was very personal. And what I was experiencing is as far as the illness and the diagnosis and then the ultimate prognosis, which was death in one case and life in another, I was sort of a relationship or two removed from it. And so I just real honestly think that made it easier. But what I would say to that is, first of all, you don't need to be able to tell the entire church what you're going through.
Sure.
In fact, I think oversharing is a real thing that we don't often talk about. Henry Nouwen has this great analogy, sort of illustration that he basically is talking about, yes, we should share sort of some of the most vulnerable, intimate parts of our soul. But every time you do that, you're giving a piece of yourself away and you're trusting that that person will care for that little piece of you, but you don't know if they will and they won't always. Sometimes people will take what you tell them and they will do terrible, hurtful things with that information, and that hurts, and that's a piece of you. And so I think that we've got to be okay with sharing, yes, but also know that the call and the expectation is not to be vulnerable, not to share about your frustrations, your doubt with everyone,
yeah.
but with someone. And so to me, that's always really helped. I don't like to have many secrets, and I would say I don't have many secrets. But I also only have a few people who know everything. And I'm okay with that. I mean, I think I could be wrong, but I think that that's an okay way to go about Christian living. No secrets, but it also doesn't mean everyone has to know everything.
I think that's wise. Yeah, it's things that grow in a secret garden often grow mutant. That's uh-huh. what Paul Tripp would tell us. But you don't have to let everybody into that garden because, as you said, you know, quite frankly, you know, not everyone is going to, in your words, take that piece of your heart and be, you know, charitable with it. It's right. not going to be, it's not going to hold it as well. I think that's a great point to look at the church itself and find those people who can share, not only is your sharing, but also share their lives with you to where there's a mutual burden bearing going on. People who can keep a secret, people who can hold you know, the weight of your emotions. And very few people probably in a circle can do that with the amount of people. I'd say another thing is, you know, the big question in philosophy has always been, you know, how can a good God allow bad things to happen?
Right.
And we say, you know, it's if God is all powerful, he is all good. Well, if he's all powerful, then he could stop it. If he's all good, then he would stop it. And
so he's either not one of them. He's either not powerful or good. Yeah, sure.
But we forget oftentimes there's a third element to that, that he's also all wise.
Yeah.
And his ways are higher than our ways. If we are confused by the way that God does things, that's normal. That's right and good. Evelyn Underhill had that quote to where a God that is small enough to be understood is not worthy enough to be worshiped. Mm. And there's a sense there to where God is going to do things that confuse us, confound our expectations. And doubt happens when our faith expectations meet the reality of the world. It's going to happen. And we can either take a step forward in that or we can take a step back in that.
Yep. And that was the whole point that I made early, but it's where I was the most passionate. But doubt, pain, disappointment, none of these things were going to be voided of while we're here on earth. Mm-hmm. And yet none of them in their self, well, some of them can be a result of sin, but not always. And so it's not ever what the initial path of totality brings you. It's where you go in it. And in doubt, do you move towards greater and greater disbelief or greater and greater desire and hunger for the Lord, despite having serious confusion and questions? I mean, I can honestly say that a lot of my spiritual life, especially the last 10 years, has been moving towards the Lord, but with a lot of question and at times frustration and blatant disagreement. Mm-hmm. God, I do not agree with this, but I'm trusting, and it's really hard to trust, but I'm going to follow after you because I do, at the end of the day, believe that your ways are better. Mm-hmm.
Why is belonging to a local church helpful in walking through your doubts?
Yeah, man, there's a lot of directions I could go with that. First of all, I think going back to what I would really just call friendship and needing those people to talk and to process with. You know, if you're listening and you're like, man, I don't know if there's anyone that knows me inside out, then I would respectfully ask, like, do you have a best friend, a really, really, really good friend? And most of the time, the answer is no. We're not very good at friendship in 2024, it turns out. Mm-mm. Especially men. And that's part of why we would invite you to come to men's breakfast. Not that that will be friendship in itself, but hopefully that can be a place where you can find someone. And so I think friendship, something we're not great at. I think the church is a great place to find brothers and sisters in Christ to develop that sort of deep, sincere relationship in which you can then have space to process doubts. And so I think that's one reason. Two is I think you need to continue to surround yourself by truth. A lot of times if you're doubting, then there's a chance, especially if it's sort of doubts of the mind, you are sort of ingesting some sort of material. So call it a book, a podcast, another group of friends who is kind of filling your head with just their ideas. They're wrong. They might not even be all bad. I'm not trying to make them out to be the problem. And so while that's happening, I think you also need to then be fulfilling yourself with some truth and ultimately stay open to hearing from both sides, if you will. And the side of faith, the side of Christianity is going to be most outwardly spoken in the church. And so where are you going to find truth? In the church. So continue to surround yourself and continue to ingest truth while you're also ingesting and processing whatever it is that's causing you to doubt. I think to keep those balanced. And another thing, and I didn't get to mention this. This might be off topic. You tell me if it is. They can cut it out.
I will.
But on doubts of the mind and a lot of the things we read, I've talked with several people about this, and I'm not even saying it has to be Christian material, but like read published authors.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is I talk to a lot of people who honestly get a lot of their beliefs, their questions through Reddit and forums, and there's a time and a place for those. And even podcasts is okay, but like you and I are doing a podcast right now. I don't know if we have any right to do, but no one would publish a book I wrote. That's because I'm not that smart. I don't have that good of ideas. And so I would encourage people, think of this as like you're writing a research paper a little bit if you're in doubt. And if you're questioning something, stay to legitimate sources. Okay. And yes, my preference would be you stay true to sources that hold sacred the Christian viewpoint of life or whatever. But even if not, like at least stay with a credible source and a published author and someone that is not just like sitting in their mom's basement writing on Reddit in the middle of the night.
Well, because typically those things, those writers, the bloggers, the Guardians of Truth, if you would,
they're self-proclaimed.
Well, they're doing it in isolation. They're doing the very thing that you're not editor, wanting to do. I mean, it's there's no other eyes on it.
That's such a good
point. If for anything, being around the church, reading books published by Crossway, Zondervan, Brazos, I mean, these reputable Christian publications, there's more eyes on it to where someone could say, hey, that's not right.
Yeah.
Hey, you're not thinking right in this way. And that's one of the beauties of, to bring it back, belonging to our local church, is that you have more perspective to where if you're thinking something in isolation, again, we bring back our trip quote, it's things that grow in a secret garden often grow mutant.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're in a secret garden, you're going to grow mutant and you're going to think things that are not necessarily natural and that aren't necessarily going to be of a sound mind. That's why we belong to the local church, because we have different sounding boards, we have different perspectives, and as you said, bring us into truth.
Yeah. So let me ask you a question. Deconstruction is kind of the in a lot of ways sort of this cultural moment of doubt, and I think doubt and deconstruction are different. Maybe how are they different? And then what is the slippery slope in moving from doubt to deconstruction in your mind?
With deconstruction, I think you have to ask, what are you deconstructing? You know, are you deconstructing Jude 3, the faith, contending for the faith held once and for all by the saints? Or are you deconstructing a Christian subculture that was developed in the 90s and early 2000s? I think that you got to start there in figuring out, okay, what is it that you're angry at? I mean, there's that scene in Big Daddy where Adam Sandler tells the little kid, he's like, everybody's mad at their dad. And the goth guy walks by and the rollerblader walks by and they say something to Adam Sandler like, oh, yes. And he goes, you're not mad at me. You're mad at your dad. And it's like, well, are you really mad at Christianity or are you mad at that subculture that was created? And I think that's where you start. You figure out, all right, what is it am I really mad at and what am I deconstructing here? Because a lot of this goes back to rejecting gods that never really existed to begin with. Are you rejecting God or are you rejecting some
subculture idea of
God? Yeah, this graven image that was erected by a Christian subculture that really wasn't a god to begin with.
That's such a good point. I mean, because, and you can't get it here, not in 2024 or ever, but the church, when it functions perfectly, right? When Christianity and faith is robust and is moving forward in the perfect way that God planned for it to, can you even deconstruct that? Like, I really don't. I think it's a lot harder. And so you're right. I think parsing out, like, what is your initial deconstruction? Is it some sort of subculture, suburban, largely Anglo mega evangelicalism, mega church evangelicalism? If that is, then yeah, work some of that out. And there is some of that to be sort of deconstructed. But as the simple phrase goes, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, which I think we see happen a lot. I think people fail to make that initial diagnosis.
Yeah. There was that video that came out a long time ago, 10 years, 15 years ago. Jefferson Bethke was the first one who kind of made that distinction between Jesus and religion. And I mean, it went viral. Like, I hate religion, but I love Jesus sort of thing. And I mean, yeah, I don't
like that quote.
You can agree to it to an extent, but it is creating a bit of a dichotomy there to where I think you have to be careful with Christianity as the faith once and for all delivered to the saints. You have to ask yourself again, what are you deconstructing? But also you have to ask yourself why.
Yeah.
Why am I deconstructing this? A lot of people, you know, again, my opinion, and again, church hurt is a real thing. And I want to say that's a real thing. Absolutely. But a lot of these more public deconstruction stories, my opinion, but they kind of, if they're done in such a public light, what are we looking for here? Is this really a personal quest for truth, or is it a quest for public affirmation?
Yeah.
I mean, only the person can say that, but from an outside subjective perspective of myself, sometimes it's less of that quest for personal truth and more of a reach for public affirmation. I could be wrong in that, but I think that those are two things that we probably need to look at as we're having our doubts and as we're thinking through these things. What is it that I'm doubting? What is it that I'm deconstructing? And then why am I doubting? Why am I wanting to deconstruct, if you would?
Yeah. And I think we're running out of time, but
I'll tell you when we run out of time.
Well, I've got the timer, but that's fine.
I'm the host today.
I know. Sorry. You're doing a great job.
Continue.
I do think in times of doubt, your baseline of faith can be far, far lower than you ever imagined it would be. And what I mean by that, in my worst seasons of doubt, I'm thinking of one in particular where the only thing I prayed for a while was, God, I guess I believe because I'm still praying. Hmm. And that's true. And yet that says so much. Like, that sounds like, oh, a pastor said that? Yeah, I did. And also, how much does that still say about my faith? And not to, hey, whoa, look at me. But at the end of the night, what am I doing? My head hits the pillow. I'm still calling out to God Almighty. I don't have words. I don't have phrases. I don't have desire. But I still have belief, or I wouldn't be saying God, the very word, in the posture of prayer. And so my encouragement and hope to people is, if you ever find yourself, that's about all you can pray, then, man, I've been there. And there is light at the end of the tunnel. The path of totality will end. I do believe that it'll end for those who press in to the faith. But also, don't be okay with that, but be comfortable in knowing that sometimes your prayer life, your spiritual rhythms can be reduced to a simple, hey, God, I guess I still believe. Yeah.
There's more power in those three words, God help me. Yeah. Than just about anything else.
That's so true.
Pierce, thank you for your time. As always, a great sermon, and we look forward to starting a new series next week called Jesus in the Old Testament, where Pastor Gary will be kicking us off. Pierce, have a
OT.
Wonderful day.
We got OT coming up.
Overtime.
Or Old Testament. Thank you, David.
Yes, sir.
Bye-bye.